And welcome back in. Hour 4 of Morning Drive on this Friday. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Hartman, Preds forward, bottom of the hour. Looking forward to that. How do the Preds shake this one off and bounce back against the Wild? Big three games coming up. We'll get to all of that this hour. But Sweet 16 last night, Sweet 16 tonight. And there were 8 teams from the Southeastern Conference just about a week and a half ago. And now there be 0.
Kansas State, excellent defense. Transition defense was spectacular. They gave up 2 points in transition the entire game to Kentucky. They are right now the best team in the tournament as far as points per game defense. They're 51 points a game. And obviously, the Alexander kid misses a three at the end of the game. Just excellent defensive effort from a Kansas State team that has been battle-tested all season. Loyola Chicago wins again with a crazy three-point basket with about six seconds to go. That's three game-winning shots, three games in a row, all with less than 10 seconds to go. And certainly Tennessee obviously was a part of that. I think right now, Michigan absolutely dominant against Texas A&M and a very bad showing from Gonzaga. Florida, that was a good game at halftime, but Florida State dropped the hammer in the second half. I don't know why you would not be rooting for Michigan and Loyola Chicago to play in the Final Four. And no disrespect to Kansas State fans or Florida State fans, I don't mean anything against you guys personally. I just don't feel like you guys are intriguing. I'd like to see Loyola Chicago play Michigan in at least one half of the bracket, and then the other half of the bracket I'm expecting to get really good teams, whether it's, you know, Villanova, West Virginia, Purdue, Kansas, Duke, whatever. We're going to get really good teams on the right side of the bracket. I don't want to see Florida State or Kansas State play in the national championship game. It just doesn't feel like that's going to give Duke a game or Villanova a game or Kansas a game. And I know Kansas and Kansas State would be a very unique story as a very big rivalry in the state of Kansas. But I don't know how you're not rooting for Loyola Chicago and Michigan right now.
And after you think about it, from the right side, you get your blue blood programs. Then on the left side, you're going to have the Cinderella story, Loyola, Sister Jean, that whole thing. And then how about this for Michigan? We've talked about how, you know, John Beilein's probably the most underrated coach in America. Very good program. Three Elite Eights in the last 6 years. But we're also coming up on the 25-year anniversary of the Fab Five going to the Final Four national title.
And listen, he's played a national championship game before. Remember the Spike Albrecht team against Louisville? We remember that game because it actually happened and Louisville won the national championship that night. I think it's... Again, my question about Kansas State and Florida State, though, is to the casual basketball fan, they're not Cinderella, but they're not a blue blood. They're in this no man's land in between that I don't think it appeals to people to be a middle of the pack ACC team that's a 9 seed playing in the national championship game. I don't think that appeals to anybody. That's not a knock on Florida State. I just don't think it's like Michigan, there's an appeal there. They are an elite level team that was one of the top 6 or 7 teams picked to win the national title at the start of the tournament. Loyola Chicago obviously has this charm about it, despite Tennessee fans probably feeling a little miffed right now. It still is a team that everyone can root for and sort of get behind Cinderella. But if Kansas State plays in the national title game, again, what is Kansas State? They're a middle-of-the-pack Big 12 team. They're not Cinderella. They're not Blue Blood. They're a 9 seed. By definition, they're an average tournament team. I don't want to see Kansas State or Florida State play in the national title game. That's basically where I've fallen after what happened last night. And I also don't want to see Kansas State play Villanova and lose by 50 in the national title. Like, I want a competitive national championship game, and right now I feel like Michigan's the only one that can do that.
Do you guys take any issue with Kentucky walking off the court last night? They didn't go through the handshake line. Now, John Calipari said after the game, you know, we tried, waited around. They were, you know, he shook hands with the coaches. They were celebrating as they should have. You know, they haven't done that before, but I know that whenever anything like that happens, people kind of get up in arms about it, of, oh, they're sore losers.
I'm not going to rip on the kids. I don't think the kids are bad kids or whatever. I think Calipari has a reputation for being a big baby sometimes and whining a lot. And, you know, it does. It's not surprising. Let's just leave it at that. It's not a big deal. It's not a huge story to me. But it's definitely not surprising that Kentucky looks at a loss at Kansas State in the Sweet 16 and is sort of, I don't know, snobbish about the loss, I guess, a little bit.
I would probably have more of an issue with it if it was a senior-laden team with a lot of veterans and guys, captains and things like that nature that have been here and done the whole thing before. But with Calipari, with all these freshmen, young guys, I mean, they're probably just so dejected that they don't even realize the moment they're in.
And like I said, if these were – like, these are good kids. Like, these, from by all accounts, those are pretty good kids. So I don't – I don't really have a huge problem with it. It's not like
I honestly don't care about the handshake.
Yeah,
line.
It's not like Boogie Cousins walking off. Like we would all be like, "Oh my gosh, Boogie Cousins!"
But I just,
off. He's
think
a jerk.
I think we make too big of a deal about it.
You know, what's funny is you bring that up. Is I feel like sportsmanship is a big thing, but after the high school level, like when you get to big time, and I separate big time college sports from Division II, Division III.
Sure.
So to me, when you get to that level, that's the last thing I'm looking at, and I know. Mm-hmm. Sportsmanship and doing the right thing for the little kid watching and all that, but
I disagree with I mean, the part of what makes the NHL so cool is that you can physically beat the tar out of each other for seven games, and then you have the right thing to do to stand up and shake hands with each other afterward. It's a respect thing. So I think what makes the NHL playoffs, one of the things that makes it such a cool thing, is the handshake line at the end of a series. So I'm not going to sit there and on one hand say, oh, this is one of the coolest things about the NHL, and then on the other hand say, I don't want a bunch of kids learning that lesson, because I do.
That's fair.
It's not a big deal. I'm not trying to make this – I'm not, like, upset about it or whatever, but do I think it would be cool that if after every tournament game, every team in the tournament shook hands with each other? I think that'd be a great message to send to kids. Why deprive our children of a good visual?
See, I'll give
and
you
good piece of, but I'm not going to rip the kids for not doing it last night. It's not that big a deal.
I'll give you one thing that would have bothered me last night. Now, Michigan had 99 points last night. They got the ball back with about 20 seconds to go. If they would have tried to score to get 101 points when you're already up 25 points or whatever the final outcome was.
Was it Dylan Brooks for Oregon last year that took that big shot against Duke?
Yeah.
And Coach K got really angry with him.
The outcome is not in question. The spread is not in question. Like, nothing is in question.
But Coach K's also got Grayson Allen on his team and only suspended him for a game. So.
True.
I get your point. I'm with you on that. I don't want to see – you don't need to be showing people up.
Like, I consider it respectful when you dribble out the clock when you've got the game won.
Like, Scott Hartnell last night scored a goal. They're down 5-1. He knew they were down 5-1 when he scored
that
goal. You can see.
And I was totally cool with that.
I love that Scott Hartnell goes, all right, we scored. He gives a little fist pump to Mike Fisher and skates back to the bench. That's knowing your situation. And I thought Scott Hartnell did a good job of that last night. Because you see it all the time. You're up 4-0 in a hockey game. Somebody scores and they do their fist pump and slam into the boards. And you're like, dude, you're down 4-0.
Yeah.
Like, get a life, man.
That's where you just point to the scoreboard.
Yeah. Like, so I thought Hartnell, that's an appropriate sportsmanship type of reaction is knowing your place. Again, part of why the handshake line is such a cool thing in the postseason of the NHL, A, because even when you are trying to physically destroy each other, like an Anaheim Predator series, there is still a handshake line that happens at the end of that series with a mutual show of respect that I think is a great visual and a great message for young people. And I'm not going to sit there and say that that's a bad thing to have in college basketball, especially at a collegiate amateur level. NBA, don't care. NFL, whatever. But in the college game, It's you know, sportsmanship is, that's where you learn sportsmanship, is high school and college.
615-737-1025. The Preds, how do they shake it off? Will they get back on track against the Wild? Big weekend coming up. We'll preview it next on Morning Drive. Welcome back in the Morning Drive on this Friday. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Hartman coming up at the bottom of the hour as the Preds winning streak comes to an end last night, but the first regulation loss in, what, 37 days? What was it? February 17th was the last time they lost in regulation. So they get back at it tomorrow. Two road games at Minnesota and Winnipeg. 9 games to go. 5 on the road, 4 at home. And quickly a home-and-home with Minnesota in 2 of the next 3 games.
Yeah, I think the big thing for me is this weekend, obviously, we could talk about the standings and the points and the matchups in the postseason and all that stuff matters and it's huge. But to me, it's about how do you respond after taking a butt kicking? You know what I mean? Like, Toronto came in here and whipped you last night. Okay, it happens. Not that big a deal. Now you got to respond, and you got 3 games to do it against the 2 other best teams in the division. So if you were to win all 3 of these games the way you've been playing, you probably put a dagger in the Central Division coffin, so to speak. So I think if you know, it's how do you respond tomorrow night against Minnesota? How do you respond then with on short rest against Winnipeg? And then you get the friendly confines on Tuesday against Minnesota. It's all about how you respond. And there's nothing about this team that says they won't respond in a good, positive way tomorrow night. Doesn't mean they're going to win, but they've been the best team in the NHL from a record standpoint, and they're clearly the best team in the Western Conference this season for a reason. Let's see them go out and handle their business like the angry team that I expect to see this weekend.
Well, the last time they lost the game where it wasn't a 1-goal difference was Saturday, February 17th. They lost at home to Detroit 3-1. How did they bounce back? They crushed Ottawa 5-2. So your most recent sample of a, quote, lopsided loss, I mean, they come back and put up a five spot.
Yeah.
For whatever that's
worth. And after the game, and Chase, you were there, so maybe you could speak to this more in the locker room, but I'm assuming that they were a pretty irritated bunch last night after the game. That they that group, and I think Ellis talked about it, Laviolette talked about it, that this group of guys is very clearly, they understand what happened. I think being humbled every now and then is good for a team. So, again, if this was a team that was fighting for a playoff spot, last night would have been a lot bigger deal. But it's not that big a deal. It serves as a humbling reminder that you can get your butt kicked on any given night in the NHL, and you did. How do you respond?
And just listen to Ryan Ellis.
Yeah.
That's all you have to do.
I think we deserved every second of that. Good team came in here, played a lot better than us, and I think you look at this stretch we've had of whatever 14, 15, 16 games with points or whatever it is. We've been squeaking out wins, we've been finding ways to win, but that's not playoff hockey, and I think we've got away with that for some time, and it finally caught up with us playing a really good team, and now I'll give them credit. They were so much better than us tonight.
And that was Ryan Ellis last night postgame. You know what's funny is I'm looking at the ESPN.com with the Preds schedule, and for a win they put a green W, and for a loss they put a red L. You got to go back pretty far to see a lot of red L's. There's not too many red L's on the Preds schedule, and you look at the last time they actually even had a losing streak was February 15th and February 17th, and then February 7th and February 8th. I mean, this team, short of a little hiccup in early February, 2018 calendar-wise, it's been dominant.
No, I mean, listen, they're the best team in the NHL from a record standpoint for a reason. Now, their record against the best teams in the East isn't exactly pristine. They're 3-4-1 against the top five teams in the East. They still have a road trip against Tampa and a road trip against Washington to end the season. So we'll find out a little bit more if they can win those two games and then have a winning record against the best five teams from the Eastern Conference. I think they are the best team top to bottom in the Western Conference. I'm not as sure about that if they match up with an Eastern Conference team. I'm not sure, but you know, you could make a big statement in the division and claim a banner in the over the weekend. If you get 4 points and you handle Minnesota and Winnipeg, you all but give yourself a division championship this weekend. So it's not just about responding to a bad game. It's about responding in a critical time against top competition that is chasing you down right now in the division. If Winnipeg wants any chance to try to take that division away from you, they've got to win tonight or on Sunday. And Minnesota has to beat you as well. It's in your control. Go win the games you're supposed to win.
615-737-1025. Let's say good morning to Adam in Clarksville, who's up next on Morning Drive. What's going on, Adam?
Hey, buddy. All right, so a couple things. Appreciate them soccer tickets. I've never been to a soccer game before, so it'll be my first experience. But
cool.
Looking forward to that tomorrow. I was watching that game last night, and I'm kind of exactly what you guys are just talking about. I'm glad that they got kicked in the mouth one good time, especially at home, because if you ask anybody, Nashville's just completely indestructible at home.
Right.
And so for them to get that kind of a wake-up call, like if you're not playing your game, even if you're at home, you can get waxed by a good team. And Pittsburgh, they've done it to us, and I'm hoping that when we get that rematch with them, they'll kind of linger back on a game like that and stay extra sharp. But, yeah, I'll hang up, man. I appreciate them tickets. I'll see you guys more.
Yeah, we'll see you tomorrow, buddy.
Can't wait to see you tomorrow. Come by the stadium. Reach out to us on the Twitters.
The Twitters.
At Braden Gall, at Nick Kale. Chase won't be there, and don't talk to him.
Yeah, please don't. Don't talk to me, and don't request music.
But we will be there. I cannot wait to get Nashville SC in this town started and rolling. It's going to be a ton of fun. I love the sport. I think the city is going to love the sport. And I know we're talking Preds right now, but I just think about where you all were had you been on the Preds bandwagon from day one. Like, think about, you know, there's a lot of Preds fans in this town that have been going to games for 20 years. Chase has been going to games for 20 years. I've been going to games for 20 years. There's a lot of people in this town. Now, we have a wide-open bandwagon. We'll welcome everybody onto the bandwagon. But you have a chance to sort of get started from day one tomorrow, and you could be a part of a record. So NashvilleSC.com tickets, really affordable to get in. It's a perfect time during the calendar year where you want to get the kids and the family out to a cool thing on a Saturday afternoon. It's perfect, especially once the basketball and hockey season is over. But, man, it's going to be a ton of fun tomorrow, and obviously we're rooting for a W. But tomorrow's more about making history than anything else. Tomorrow could be record-breaking crowd, and there's only one first, right? Like, you get the puck, I've got the puck with the Florida Panthers logo on. Like,
yep.
There's only one first game ever at home for Nashville SC. You should try to be a part of that tomorrow. It's going to be a lot of fun. Also, soccer's like 2 hours. Nice, tidy window. You can be home by like 7:30 or 8.
Yeah, and we live in a day and age where, you know, attention spans are shorter than ever. Soccer's like the one sport where you can get in and out, and it's not going to bog down your whole day, and you're not going to lose your attention.
No, and it's one of the things that I've talked to a lot of guys at Nashville SC about this, and some more national people that cover the sport. All the market research will tell you, especially millennials, younger generation, commercial-free, 2-hour time block. That's why that new football league we're talking about is going to go fewer commercials and have a shorter, you know, time on television. You know exactly when the game starts and when the game's going to end in soccer. Like, you don't have to worry about, you know, 16 extra TV timeouts or, God, the end of a basketball game these days. Oh, my God, with reviews.
30 minutes for 30 seconds.
I mean, the end of the Marshall Wichita State game was a great basketball game that took, like, literally 26 minutes for them to run 30 seconds off the clock. And I'm going, you got to be kidding me. And this is why the NFL and college football are so focused on drilling down their times. Soccer doesn't worry about that. Soccer is a very tidy 2-hour. You're going to be in and out. Doesn't take up a huge chunk of your day. No commercial interruptions. Not a lot of TV stoppages. You're going to have constant action the entire time. And again, oh, by the way, tomorrow's the first time ever you get to do this in the city of Nashville. And it's the only time that it will be the first time. So you don't want to miss it. Should be a ton of fun tomorrow. So,
and kind of getting back to the sports too, with, you know, attention spans, I think that's why baseball has some of the issues it has. Like, my wife's uncle is a diehard baseball guy, but he's 64. He has an attention span. The 24-year-old in the day of social media, pitching changes and guys stepping out of the batter's box to fix their gloves, the game goes 3.5 hours. I mean, you're losing people.
Well, and again, every single sport, I agree. Every single sport. Baseball has got the pitch clock now because of this. Like, every single sport is working on how do we trim time from our delivery to the game. And that's really what makes hockey so interesting is, yeah, they've got these two long intermissions, but in that 20 minutes, it goes pretty quickly. It takes about 40 minutes to get a 20-minute period done. You got a couple TV timeouts, but for the most part, it's a pretty fast sport, nonstop action for 20 minutes straight. Then you get a breather, go to the bathroom, get your beer, get your popcorn, come back, boom, you're locked in for another 20 minutes. And every sport on the planet is – and that's what – hockey's what, 2 hours and 40 minutes-ish? Hockey's not a long sport either. So
no.
It appeals – I think all of that appeals. That's why every single sport is trying to go down. But this basketball stuff, I'm going to watch a lot of hoops tonight like everybody else. I guarantee you there'll be a game tonight that if it's close, the last minute and a half will have 4 replays, 16 timeouts, and it's going to take 45 minutes to get 2 minutes off the clock, and everyone's going to be screaming on Twitter about it.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. I mean, and that's the one thing, though, that I do love about Twitter for everybody is the immediate reaction to things like that, like the slow pace of a game. Those are some of the things that I think are actually fun about it, but that's a different discussion for a different day. When we come back, Ryan Hartman, Preds forward, is going to join us. Looking forward to talking to him. And we'll do so in just a few moments. Stay there. It is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Morning Drive on this Friday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Great to have you in as we take you up until 10 o'clock. Darren and Donna coming your way in just about a half hour. But right now, we welcome in our next guest, Predators forward Ryan Hartman. Ryan, good morning, and thank you for a couple of minutes. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We are doing well. Let me just ask you off the jump here. Last night's game, a 5-2 loss. Is it one of those games where you just throw the tape in the trash and move on, or are there learning moments that can be pulled from this?
Yeah, there's learning moments for any game, especially a game like that. I think there were some areas we got exposed a little bit, and it weren't on our best game, but we got to take that and get ready for the next one. So. Definitely some learning points.
So what are those areas? I mean, I know we heard Ryan Ellis talk about it after the game. Peter Laviolette talked about it after the game as well. The power play certainly needs to get going a little bit. You did get one last night. But what are the areas, when you take a loss like that, what are those areas where you go, man, this is where we need to make sure we kind of finely tune some stuff?
Right, yeah. You know, they're a fast team. You know, they got a lot of speed. And, it seems like almost every one of their guys, they're faster than the other. So. Teams like that, you got to try to, hold some guys up at times and, getting in on the puck first. And, sometimes they're beating us into the battles. And we just got to make sure we're getting into that battle first and putting the puck in good areas. You know, sometimes I feel like throughout the game, you put the puck in an area where we couldn't get it back. And, we didn't keep possession. And when they had possession, they they did some good things with the puck. So I think in that area, I think we could have been a little better with the puck, but just need to clean that up a little bit.
Ryan Hartman joining us. Ryan, I know you guys take it one day at a time, one game at a time. We're talking this morning about, you know, Stanley Cup opponents and getting back to the Stanley Cup and winning it this time around. Overall, against some of the upper echelon teams in the East, the Preds overall are 3-4-1. What are some of the discernible differences between the teams that are atop the standings in the East as opposed to what you see in the Central Division as well as the Western Conference?
Yeah, it does seem like both conferences have a little different mindsets and have a little different tendencies of their game. You know, you got the West where you got teams like LA and Anaheim that are just, you know, they're big, they're physical, tough to play against, and then the East you got some teams like, you know, like Toronto and sorry, my alarm just went off.
That's all right.
Toronto and Tampa Bay. Who, you know, they got speed, they got, you know, they're going to the net, and so there's a little differences there, but besides that, you know, it's just hockey, and you know, we try not to think about the other team too much. If we're on our game and we're playing relentless and we're hitting and getting on the puck first, you know, it's a tough night for the other team most of the time.
A lot of us read about Matthias Ekholm's very meticulous pregame ritual the other day on the website, now that Matthias is a published author, Ryan, and we all got to read about the pasta and the meat sauce and everything. You got three games, big games, coming up in the next 4 days. You know it's going to be a tough stretch. Do you go into it as a player doing anything differently, trying to get more rest, you know, different diet, different pattern, or is it all about staying exactly the same? How do you approach knowing you got three 60-minute battles in a four-day stretch?
Yeah, I think consistency is key. You know, I've always kind of, from when I started playing, try to, you know, find a ritual, not necessarily a ritual, just trying to, you know, do everything the same so your body, you know, gets used to, and almost your body kind of knows it's game day and that you're getting ready, and, you know, by the time puck drops, you're 100% ready, you know, you're not slacking, just waking up in the second period, you know, you want to be ready right away. So I think, you know, having that consistency in your daily routine kind of reminds your body sometimes that, you know, it is game time, and make sure that you're ready.
Ryan Hartman joining us here on Morning Drive. Ryan, you've got 9 games left, 5 on the road, 4 at home, but of the 9, 7 are against playoff-caliber teams. Is that something that you guys look forward to kind of keep fresh and stay sharp, or would you rather have a couple of teams that are out of it to kind of maybe just relax a little bit and breathe a little easier as you head into what could be a long Stanley Cup playoff run?
Yeah, I like it. You know, I like the test. I like, having to play a good night, you know, each and every night leading in the playoffs. You know, sometimes, you know, teams are so high in the standings and they kind of, you know, doze off a little bit up the playoffs just because, you know, they're in. And, you know, we don't want to do that. We want to, you know, come in full stride. We want to come and play against high caliber teams and test ourselves before playoffs. You know, obviously, like you said, it's, you know, depending on how long you go, it's a grind and it's a long, long playoff there. It takes a toll on your body, right? But I think we need to come in, you know, with that mindset and, you know, playing those opponents are definitely going to help in the long run.
Obviously, you've played against Mike Fisher before you got to town, and everybody in this city, in this locker room, is extremely familiar with him. You've had a chance now to skate with him a little bit. What are your first impressions of being around and playing with a guy like Mike Fisher?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's a great guy, you know, from the locker room, from on the ice. He works hard, you know, he's strong, he's big, you know, he throws guys around at times. You know, he's great for us on the PK. He makes some great plays offensively and defensively. Like his pass, you know, towards the end of the game last night, the hard seat. Just a great guy to have on the team. You know, I'm sure losing him after last season was tough. And for him coming back, I'm sure he had a bad taste in his mouth in the way, you know, making it all the way but not, you know, finishing off. So he's definitely ready and prepared to do something special this year.
Let me ask you about Winnipeg in particular. I know you're one game at a time and you got Minnesota first, but just your first game was, I know you had to jump on a flight and head from Chicago up to Winnipeg, and you got to play in that really electric game and great atmosphere and all that stuff. What makes them so dangerous, and did you learn anything in your first battle that you can maybe take into this weekend?
They're a dangerous team. You know, they got guys that can shoot the puck, and they got a guy like Wheeler who can. Seems like sometimes you can skate around your whole team if you give them space. But you know, every time you play that team, it's up and down. You know, they got some guys that will get in there in the battles, and I think sometimes they rely on their power play. You know, they got that Laine who, if you give him time to get a shot, he seems to either hit the post, they're almost going, or go in. So, you know, anytime we play against a team like that that have a power play, even like Toronto, has a good power play like that, you know, the key is discipline. You want to stay out of the box as much as possible because, you know, sometimes teams rely on their momentum to get themselves into games and back into games and, you know, on the score sheet. So, you know, I think we play discipline and keep it 5-on-5. And I think with our relentlessness, we can wear this team out.
Ryan, good stuff, man. We appreciate the time, and I'm very jealous of a guy that gets to set his alarm for 9:30 a.m. I don't know what that's like.
It might have been a little later if I didn't call him this morning, but, yeah, it's nice.
And Ryan, we do appreciate it. We believe your mother is now following us on Twitter, so we appreciate that, Ryan. Thank you.
Yeah, she's pretty active on it, I think.
Thanks, Ryan. We appreciate
that's
it.
That's awesome.
All right, guys.
You got it.
That's awesome. Active. This is the thing. This is how you know you're getting old. The people that you're covering playing sports now, their mothers are super active on social media. That's the, like, you know you're getting old when the guys you're covering, Ryan's in what is basically his second full season in
right.
the NHL. I mean, he's not a he's a pretty young player, so.
She has the perfect handle, too, at Mrs. Hartsey on Twitter. Hartman gave us a follow as we were doing that.
Now, we had a big discussion on Smashville Live when we had Scott Hartnell and Ryan Hartman on the show, which one is Hartsey, and of course the story is that Scott Hartnell is trying to refer to Ryan Hartman as Deuce in the locker room, not for get your head out of the gutter, Nashville, because he's the second Hartsey. You do not ask Mrs. Hartsey to change her nickname. That is not
no.
that she gets to keep whatever nickname she
no,
wants.
No, she is Mrs. Hartsey.
Yeah, she gets to be whatever she wants, whatever her nickname on Twitter she wants it to be. That's what she gets to be.
Yeah, and you know you're getting old when I think if you were to I'm just off the top of my head right now, outside of Pekka, I think you and I are older than pretty much all the Nashville star athletes.
Scott Hartnell's older than me by like a couple of months. Fisher's older than both of us. And Pekka's older than both of us, but I think that's it.
Any Titans over 35?
Oh, I'm sure there's a veteran in there somewhere. We'd have to double
check. Off the top of my head, I can't think. I mean, I really feel old now. And yikes. I'm only 34, but I'm starting to feel old when I just realized that, you think about it, we're talking about all these guys now that are 26 and 27, and we're almost a decade old.
Oh, and I'm talking to Ekholm on Wednesday night, and like he's obviously they're about to have their first child. At any moment now, they're going to get that call, and obviously wish them the best of luck and everything, but and best of health, but he's like the elder statesman of the Swedish clan in the locker room. There's like five or six guys that are all big-time players, and he's like the grandfather. He's like 28. Mm-hmm. He's the grandfather of the group at like 28 years old. So, yes, we are definitely getting old. But we also have, I think the Titans were like the second or third, maybe fourth youngest team in the NFL last year, one of the youngest teams in the NFL. And then, of course, the Predators are loaded with a bunch of young guys. I've got the roster right here. Brett Kern's 32 years old. Bryce McCain's 31. Brian Arakpo's 31 years old.
I can't imagine there's a Titan 35.
Alex Tanny, 30 years old. Here we go. Delaney Walker was going to be one that I mentioned. He's 33. Brandon Whedon, I don't believe, is on the roster anymore. He's 34 years old. It looks like
Alex Tanny even on the roster?
That's Harry Douglas, 33, cut. By the way, Brandon Whedon being the oldest guy is just hilarious after the baseball career. And didn't he get drafted at like 28 years old or something crazy?
Yeah. Yep.
Drew Henson style.
Yeah. When we come back, we've got On Tap tonight, and also Chase sat down not only with Colton Sissons last night, but also two of the biggest Nashville Predator fans walking God's green earth. Stick around. That's coming up next. You'll hear from them on the other side. Morning Drive, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. How about that? Back-to-back pucks and sticks on a Saturday and a Sunday night. I like it. Preds, two road games in a row. Big ones coming up.
Get right out of Nissan Stadium after a big Nashville SC win. Slide right into a bar somewhere, TV, at your living room, catch the Preds that night, you're good to go.
Great sports day tomorrow between Nashville SC, the Preds at night, the Elite Eight. Could be one of the best days so far in the calendar year.
Big time stuff tomorrow. Yeah, absolutely. I'm locked in on that for sure.
All right, let's get to On Tap tonight.
It's your guide for the happenings around town and what to watch from your couch. Here's What's On Tap tonight, now on Morning Drive.
All right, so I'll give you my On Tap tonight, and it's one of the basketball games. Ooh, look at that song. I like it. We'll get to that in a moment as well. But there was this movie with Justin Timberlake and Ben Affleck called Runner Runner. It was about poker and online poker. And basically, Justin Timberlake gets down to Costa Rica to challenge Ben Affleck, who's running this poker scam website. And an FBI agent interrupts him and says to Justin Timberlake, I'm enjoying harassing you because you're a Princeton kid and I went to Rutgers. Well, tonight... in March Madness, West Virginia takes on Villanova. Now, I went to Temple.
Little blue collar, white collar there.
Yes. So I went to Temple, and I do not like Villanova University, which is why I am going to watch that game and root for Bob Huggins and the Mountaineers. And oh, by the way, I'm calling for the outright win tonight. West Virginia, who I have in my Final Four, they defeat Villanova tonight. That's what's on tap for me.
West Virginia, very, very good. That is an awesome, awesome basketball game. I think Texas Tech, Purdue, that whole bracket's going to be really good tonight. Texas Tech Purdue is a really good game. Great defense from Texas Tech. Purdue, of course, without their best player, Isaac Haas. But that is a really big one tonight. I'm with you. I think West Virginia Villanova is the best matchup. West Virginia wants to play that frenetic style up and down. They got some senior guards that can really play. My question is, do they have the size down low, the interior presence, and sort of the mental toughness to match up with a Villanova program that is, in my opinion, the best team in the tournament and the best program in college basketball? So, with all due respect to your alma mater in the city of Philly, Villanova's the best program in America right now.
No question.
So, this is going to be that I'm with you. That is a great game. Clemson and Kansas just seems so under the radar because Clemson's a four seed, and all of a sudden they're here in the Sweet 16 with a chance to knock off Kansas. Syracuse feels like more of a Cinderella against Duke tonight, and the Texas Tech Purdue game is going to be really fun. If you watched the Florida Texas Tech game last weekend, that was a fantastic basketball game. So Texas Tech plays really hard. Good defense. Should be fun. All basketball tonight should be great.
And Chase's On Tap tonight is he's going to another state to take in a concert, and basically he's going off the grid for a couple of days.
Yeah, I'm going to see the Pacers and the Clippers tonight. They're in Indianapolis. And then after that, I'm going to a venue called The Vogue and going to see a band called Hairbangers Ball. They're basically an 80s hair metal cover band, and they're awesome.
I can't wait. Hilarious. Are you going to Broad Ripple?
Yeah, that's where it is. That's where the venue is.
Broad Ripple in North Indianapolis is so much fun. Check out the Roskeller if you get downtown. Great brats and
I've been there.
Beer garden, brats, live music, great place in downtown Indy. Check out the Roskeller.
Okay. So I will have a full report on Monday.
Sounds good. So yesterday, Chase was able to catch up with two of the biggest Nashville Predator fans in the area, and they are also going to be in the area on Tuesday, April 3rd, as SmackDown, WWE, will bring SmackDown Live to Bridgestone Arena. It's the final stop before WrestleMania, and Chase was able to catch up with WWE superstar Rusev and his gorgeous wife, Lana, at the Preds game. Take a listen.
Chase McCabe downstairs with WWE superstars Rusev and Lana. They are in the house tonight. Of course, SmackDown coming up in just a few weeks on April 3rd here at Bridgestone Arena. But they're wearing their Preds gold, and I know that you guys are very big Preds fans, big hockey fans. So what is it that you're doing here tonight?
We're here to support, obviously, Rusev Day.
Yes.
The ravishing Rusev Day, because yes. Lana is here. We're here to support the Predators. And nonetheless, we talk about SmackDown coming in town.
You guys, I know we're here throughout the playoff run last year. We saw you with your Preds gear. How did you guys become Predators fans?
We moved to Nashville. And Predators is Nashville. So I was not a hockey fan before that. And as soon as I came to a game with my wife, we just loved the environment, loved the Predators, and we've been fans ever since.
I grew up in Russia, and my dad would actually make an ice skating rink every year because 8 months of the year it snows. So I've always loved the ice skate and play hockey, and I'm a big hockey fan.
In Bulgaria, we're too poor to play hockey.
Sorry. So you hear the passion that these fans have here. Does that remind you a little bit of the WWE universe?
Actually, it really does. All the chants, they use suck chants after all the goals and everything. It's just, It actually reminds me a lot, except that we used to have more fireworks than the Nashville Predators, but not anymore.
Yeah, I mean, and I love our fans here, the Predators fans, and they totally remind me of the WWE universe, because the WWE universe, they have so much energy, and they either love you or hate you, but they will definitely let you know what they feel.
That is for sure.
Everybody that's a wrestling fan sees the athleticism, sees all the training that you all have to go through. Do you see a little bit of a correlation between wrestling and hockey, just the physicality?
Yeah, definitely. You have to be fast. You got to be strong. You got to be agile. You got to think on your feet. You got to be smart. You got to see what's coming ahead, which is really have a lot of similarities, as you say, with WWE. Even though I've never actually played hockey, I've never even stepped on the ring.
I would be highly entertained to see Rusev in some ice skating skates and trying to skate.
I don't know. Fall. Maybe I'm too far ahead of my age at this point.
Maybe for Rusev Day, you can hit the ice.
Maybe on the right Rusev Day, you're right.
So Rusev Day, of course, is every day. How did this whole thing come about? Because it's really taken on. It's kind of like the Yes Movement, but the fans have really gotten on board with the Rusev Day.
Well, it started after I beat Randy Orton in 7 seconds. And the mayor came from Bulgaria, from Plovdiv, my hometown, gave me the key. And we declared this as Rusev Day. And later on, speaking with my wife, Lana, she was like, yeah, every day should be Rusev Day. This is your thing. This is about you. And I said, you know what? You're right. I'm going to celebrate myself every single day. And when, there he goes.
When is there going to be a Lana Day?
Well, I would say even when it's Rusev Day, it's still about Lana, but no.
I mean, that's why we have special Ravishing Rusev Days,
yes.
Especially when we teamed in the MMC challenge and all that. It was Ravishing Rusev Day.
What has that whole thing been like for you, watching her go through the training and then being able to tag team?
It made me very proud. Seeing how she always works really hard. She's the hardest working human I know. It's not just man or woman. She works so hard. She's never satisfied with any progress. She always wants more. And it just makes me proud to see how well, and she's so ready to become the best of the best. And I'm very happy for her progress.
So SmackDown Live coming here April 3rd. It's the final SmackDown before WrestleMania, and I know that's a big week for you guys in WWE. What can fans expect when they come to Bridgestone Arena on April 3rd?
The best show in town, that's for sure.
You can see everything. Yeah. Everything. The great thing about SmackDown is that you can come and it's like the greatest show in the world, because you have everything from us fighting, it's like an action movie, to fireworks, the music. Wow. It's like, well,
no more fireworks.
You never know. Any in WWE, anything could happen.
Okay, that's true.
Exactly. So, you know, that's the great thing about WWE. It's like an action movie, a rock concert, a soap opera. And so, you know, anything could happen.
And now that I called out a few celebrities, you never know. Macaulay Culkin may show up. The Rock may show up.
All these things
What's his name? Macaulay Culkin's villain in that movie. Joe Pesci may show up. You never know. With Little Van and the Wet Bandits. You never know.
Well, we're looking forward to having you guys here for SmackDown Live and, of course, WrestleMania. Happy Rusev Day, and enjoy the Preds game tonight. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I would love to see
him take out the Wet Bandits.
Oh, my God.
That would be awesome.
Chase, you have done hundreds of interviews in your life. Hundreds. Best maybe one? Thousands. That might be the best interview you've ever done.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Oh, my God. I'm gonna try to go home and be like, Haley, every day is Braden Day.
So is Rusev now officially your favorite wrestler?
I have no idea. But I don't care. I loved listening to that. That was radio gold. I actually, is he the one who looks like Khal Drogo from Game of Thrones? Am I wrong about this?
No, I think you're right.
Does he kind of look, because I met them during the cup run last year, because I sat in the Game Changer section in 102. And I'm pretty sure everyone was like pointing, and obviously I have no idea, but I said they were very nice people. And he looks a little bit like Khal Drogo and the Khaleesi, Mother of Dragons, sitting in Game
not
of Thrones.
Not to be confused with Ivan Drago.
Yes. Is that another wrestler?
No, that was from Rocky IV.
Drago. Sorry. Yeah. Khal Drogo and the Mother of Dragons were sitting in Section 102 last year, and I met them. Turns out they were wrestlers.
That was
phenomenal, by the way. And one more thing before we go. I want one more thing on tap. If you feel like coming down tomorrow at 9 a.m. to the Public Square Park in Nashville and have some really awesome, respectful conversations about how we can make this city safer, please, please come down. Tweet me, find me. We'll talk. We'll have a great, great time just talking. People need to talk more. Conversations.
Many thanks to Josh Ward, WNML in Knoxville. Eli Gold, the voice of the Alabama Crimson Tide. Crispy, Lana, Rusev, Ryan Hartman. Great show today. Have a great weekend. We will talk to you Monday morning at 6 on Morning Drive.